Hello and welcome to the Road from Emmaus podcast. I'm Jason Lowe, joined by Andrew Chow, and we are two totally ordinary Catholic guys hoping to share our journeys. Like the disciples on the road to Emmaus, we've each encountered Christ in our lives. Join us as we talk about what comes next.
Sex.
Okay, now that I've got your attention, today's episode, Marriage Prep on the Road from Emmaus. Although we aren't certified marriage prep leaders, Andrew and I wanted to share some discussion on what marriage prep would look like if we were to put a mini program together. This is the first episode in a mini two-part series in which we cover spiritual and sexual intimacy. Hope you enjoy. So Andrew, I want to start tonight's episode with your opinion, which is kind of redundant because that's basically all of our podcast episodes anyway. But listen, I needed to start this episode somehow. What was your opinion on how marriage prep went for you and Cherry? I think we actually talked about this
in one of our previous
episodes, but let's rehash that.
Yeah, I was a little underwhelmed, but more so because my expectations were different from what the marriage prep that I went to was targeted towards. Mm-hmm. So I was expecting, as is kind of my tendency, I suppose, and what I enjoy, I was expecting a lot of time to be spent on the theology of marriage, and to learn about, you know, the spiritual growth that you're expecting to have in marriage and that kind of a thing. The marriage prep that I ended up having was a lot more focused on practicalities of it. So right. Budgeting, like conflict resolution, you know, and that sort of a deal. And I found that a little bit too ordinary, given the extraordinary vocation that we were about to embark on.
Right.
So
elitist. No, I'm kidding. I totally get you because I, as someone who is obviously discerning marriage and engagement in the hopefully near future, that's also what I would be looking for, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's something that both of us want to spend today's episode on, is our own version of marriage prep. You know, like we could talk about budgeting and conflict resolution. Like we have our own kind of experiences with that, I'm sure. But I think that's kind of something you can also find with your friends and also with your, like your coworkers or something. But when it comes to, you know, the theology of marriage or, you know, what is the point of getting married within the context of our Lord, within the context of the Catholic Church, that's something that, you know, maybe we can try to shed some light into, you know, me being someone who is very much still learning about it, is trying to familiarize myself with it and to understand it better. And you having gone through or, you know, for over half a year now, being actually married. Right. So that's something we want to do, not just on today's episode, but there's actually going to be a part two. Big teaser. Wow. We've gotten there. A part two where our next episode will, you know, cover kind of the second half of this whole marriage prep thing per Andrew Chow and Jason Lowe. So the way we've kind of structured this is kind of broken it down into four categories. And obviously not necessarily a perfect method, but I think something when we talk about the theology of marriage is what we are trying to go for. So the four categories as we have it are 1, spiritual intimacy, 2, sexual intimacy, 3, having children and raising a family, and then 4, what I've termed reorienting your dream life together. And what that's going to be about is more so about, you know, everyone has their expectations. Everyone has their hopes and dreams when it comes to fulfilling their vocation of marriage. But a lot of the time, things don't go that way. A lot of the time, there's a wrench that is thrown into the plans. And so kind of just navigating those particular things together as a couple, as a married couple, is what that fourth category would be about. So today, we're just going to cover the first two, split it in half, and just talk about spiritual intimacy and sexual intimacy. So let's dive into the first one. So with spiritual intimacy, this is something that was actually only recently introduced to me as, like, I don't know, kind of a formal term by my spiritual director about 9 months ago, probably, where I was kind of talking to him about my relationship with Jen. And he brought up that, you know, as couples, as Catholic couples, You know, all couples in their relationship, they need to build things like physical intimacy. That is a big part of your ability to kind of, you know, be together, your ability to show your love for one another. That physical intimacy is certainly important. And obviously, you know, not goes without being said, but, you know, being able to practice that in a chaste way is important as well. We'll talk about chastity a little bit later. We also practice emotional intimacy. I think this is definitely something that is very not new to anyone who has dated before. Just in terms of being sensitive to, you know, your partner and kind of having that emotional IQ of, you know, what is it that has that creates or causes the ups and downs for yourself, for your partner, for the two of you together. What makes them happy? What makes you happy? Conversely, what upsets you? What makes them upset? And another one being intelligence intimacy, where you can have, you know, good conversations together, where you can talk about something like, I don't know, COVID-19 or what's going on in the world, and be able to kind of connect in that way. And you know, it's different for everyone, right? All of these things is different thresholds, different things that might interest you guys as a couple, that you guys might that might engage you guys. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit distracted because my dog appears to be barking in the background. So apologies if you can hear that. He's just chilling on the couch, staring at the door. But yeah, the last one here after that long preamble is, of course, spiritual intimacy. And obviously, as someone who has been Catholic his entire life, who has been dating only in the Catholic context, whatever that means, spiritual intimacy has always been present, but I've never really dedicated a lot of focus to it until my spiritual director actually brought it up in front of me, right? So I'll get into, you know, kind of what spiritual intimacy might mean maybe to me, but perhaps my first question, just so that I can stop talking, Andrew, is, you know, for you, what has spiritual intimacy been for you and Cherry?
Yeah, I think this is a really neat question, because intimacy, if we take that apart and look at it, it means a closeness, right? I think there are sometimes where it's overly eroticized in today's culture, but intimacy really just means a family type closeness. So to talk about spiritual intimacy means that, like, in the spiritual part of your life, there is a closeness there. I think what necessitates the ability to have this conversation, to even talk about that, is some level of spiritual awareness, right? And this is a piece that we've talked about for mm-hmm. so long. We've talked about episode after episode. It's just, you know, I talk about St. John of the Cross talking about the spiritual part of the soul and all these different things, where until and unless we're paying attention to what's happening in the spiritual part of the soul, spiritual part of our lives, we can't speak about spiritual intimacy. There was actually a particular switch in my relationship with Cherry where we, I think, had a huge growth in this area. And it was really neat. I'm sure I've talked about this before, but really it's the time when we switched our focus from each other to looking at God. And really looking at how we're growing individually as a Catholic man and a Catholic woman. And then kind of in doing so, being able to share our spiritual lives and have intelligent spiritual conversation, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
That allowed for that intimacy to grow, where previous to that, you know, our conversations were just kind of like the cheesy, you know, I like this about you, and just enjoying time together, but not being able to really round it out with that final piece of spiritual intimacy.
Yeah. And hey, I mean, that's fine too, right? Like, listening to what you just shared, that's also just building emotional intimacy. And, yeah. You know, being able to kind of have that affirmation with one another is almost a vehicle and a way for you to start building that spiritual intimacy together.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, it's basically a cliche at this point for many of us who have been in the Catholic circles long enough, I suppose, where we say, like, oh, center your relationship on Christ, right? To me, this is the tangible manifestation of what that phrase means, of what that collection of words means, right? When we say center your relationship on Christ, well, it means going out of your way to dedicate time together to build that spiritual intimacy. And so I know for Jen and I, like, we try to go to Mass together, which seems like a you know, kind of a basic thing. But I think just making that effort, you know, especially because, you know, it's not like we're living together or anything. We don't have totally synchronized lives. So sometimes she's back home with her, staying with her parents, right? And on those Sundays, I'll make the effort to, you know, go over to her area, her parents' area, and attend Mass together there, right? If she doesn't happen to be where I am, kind of thing. So, you know, that's one thing where, you know, it's beautiful to be able to share and participate in the celebration of the Mass, to be able to receive the Eucharist together. And I think it's important to recognize this. Again, like, it feels like kind of an ordinary thing, right? Oh, you're just going to Sunday Mass together. It's almost like that's an expectation, or that's almost the baseline. And sure, I mean, that's one way to look at it. But also just recognizing, I think if you look at it that way, you might also downplay the beauty of Mass itself, right? You might be falling into that trap. And so being able to participate in that together for me is a beautiful thing.
And you know what? Like, even if it is ordinary, like, that's not a bad thing. I think in a lot of ways, the intimacy is grown in doing the ordinary things together, right? Mm-hmm. Emotional intimacy isn't necessarily grown by, like, watching rom-coms every month. Like, it, you know, it's being able to, like, have times that you spent together where, like, nothing was done. And, like, those are beautiful moments. I think, you know, when we look at this in the context of marriage, there's a particular reason why this is so important, because you could say the same thing about building spiritual intimacy with a good friend, right? Like the way that you and I would through this pod, even this is us, yep, building spiritual intimacy. I think a really, really crucial reason why this is important in the context of marriage is because when we talk about vocations, which marriage is one of those kind of big V vocations, really what we're talking about is what is the operant way, the proper way, if you will, for you to advance towards sainthood. And, and in particular, when we're talking about that, it means what's the best way for me to grow into the love that's found in the Trinity, right? When we talk about our spiritual lives, we've mentioned this before, right? Like, the goal is to get to heaven, and being in heaven is participating in God's love, right? It's being in union with God in that sense. And when we talk about God and participating in love with him, that necessitates the three persons of the Trinity and the dynamicism, right, between them. So there are relationships therein between the Father, the Son and the Father and the Spirit, all of the combinations, right? And really, the best way, in my experience at least, to really affirm and to discern marriage is to see, well, is the love that I'm having with Cherry indicative or pointing me towards that love that I would find in the Trinity, that I think I would find? Or is it kind of in that trajectory? And if so, then I'm discerning in the right direction. But you can't connect those dots until you have that spiritual intimacy, because you're saying, I want to have attraction, right? Because at the end of the day, like, emotional intimacy and all the rest of it, you're really talking about attraction in a different way, yeah, until you bring it full circle.
Yeah.
Until you kind of connect all the dots and bring it into love, you can't talk about that same love that you find in the Trinity, right?
Not to be too embarrassing about this, but, you know, on the topic of attraction, I know that is one thing, actually, one of the big things that attracted me to Jen in the first place. I think just because I knew she had that within her, she has that disposition. I remember prior to starting my relationship with her, like, one of the things that I was praying over in terms of, you know, what should I be looking for, I suppose, in terms of my partner. One of the things that I kind of listed out was, you know, someone who reminded me of Mary, which is a very, it's a big kind of thing to put out there, I think. So, and I know Jen listens to this, so sorry to embarrass you. She knows this. But, like, yeah, like, that was one thing where I kind of made that point to myself. And then I was like, wait a minute, this person in my life, like, she kind of very much fits that description in her own way. And yeah, like, the reason why she is able to reflect that is because of her own interior disposition, of her own spiritual life and her own relationship with Christ. And I'm, again, slightly embarrassed, but at the same time, I'm glad we got here, because this really just underscores the point that you made off the top already, about how a lot of this has to do with your own individual disposition. I've used that word a few times now, but how you are in your own spiritual relationship with Christ, right? It does start there, where individually, you know, if you are able to lean on God, if you are able to be in a place where God is at the center of your life, like, it'll be natural, right? It'll be natural for God to become the center of your relationship if you enter into a dating relationship, if you're discerning marriage as your vocation. So that's something that I know, obviously, we've been trying to find more and more. But I think I'm very grateful that it is so natural for her to kind of be like that, to be in a place where she is constantly oriented towards Christ, because that also helps me to orient myself towards Christ and is a constant reminder of that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, right? I think the really interesting part of this, and the reason why the individuality of it is also so important, is that you both need to be growing in order for this to work. The vocation is a dynamic thing, right? So to touch back on when I was saying that the marriages ought to be a reflection of the dynamics in the Trinity, it's important to understand that that's not a one-way street. It's not just God the Father loving the other two. And the reason why I say that is one thing that clicked for me, which really affirmed my vocational choice, or my vocational discernment, I should say, was realizing that it wasn't just that Cherry was leading me to heaven. It was also that, like, I could see in a particular way that my growth and what I could share with her was also leading her to heaven. And that really clicked for me in a way, because marriage was always the weird one, in the sense that a lot of other vocations that you hear about are very missionary. It's very, like, a priest is there to shepherd the people towards God, right? And that's, like, very clear. Even the consecrated laity, right? It's, like, they're there to serve a particular community. And it's, like, well, it almost seems like marriage is to find the one and then you're good. Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's what am I doing? What is my call in this marriage? And my call is to bring Cherry to sainthood, and also to receive the way that she'll bring me to sainthood. So there's that dynamic in there. So that's part of it too here, where, you know, there's an element of kind of almost a holy helplessness as well as an impetus, right? I can't get to heaven unless she helps me, and she can't get to heaven unless I help her. And so that's a really beautiful kind of dependency there that relies on your own growth as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, just to round off this particular segment about spiritual intimacy, you know, we've already talked about going to Mass together, you know, receive the sacraments together, right? So go to confession. And also, I think just in terms of, you know, more regular things that you can, additional regular things that you can do, spiritual reading, right? Obviously, you know, I struggle with that. But if you are someone who does not struggle with it as much as I do, that's something that you can do together as well, right? I know a couple who they'll just kind of, you know, dedicate 15 to 30 minutes every Friday kind of thing just to do a reading together, maybe like a chapter of a particular spiritual book, or maybe like a few paragraphs or something. And then they'll just discuss for a few minutes, like, hey, you know, did something jump out at you? Did something strike you? Did you have any kind of reflection? And that's just another way of, you know, spending a small amount of time and you know, conscientiously building that spiritual intimacy together, right? And then just in general, praying, right? Praying the rosary, praying for each other. Something kind of another spiritual director that I heard at arm's length, he was recommending that,
like, this just sounds like you're eavesdropping in someone else's session.
I know. Basically, I had someone tell me what their spiritual director told them. Gosh. It was very awkward, I know, when I was phrasing it. What was I going to say now? Right, so recommended that the couple actually, like, pray together and, like, pray for each other, which I think is actually a very special and very direct, beautiful way to build that spiritual intimacy, right? Like, if you've ever been in a situation, and I have in a couple, where you're with a person and you're, like, praying over them or praying for them directly in front of them, like, there's such a, like that level of intimacy, and I did this with a couple of friends, it's just so you could actually probably tangibly feel it is what I'm trying to describe. Just in my heart, just in the way that, like, you know, that level of closeness that you have, it's a very, very unique and special thing. It can be a little daunting, not gonna lie. But if you're able to kind of do that with your partner, with your spouse, like, that's another way of, you know, building spiritual intimacy. So all of these different ways, that I've kind of thought of, and Andrew, I don't know if you have any more,
Honestly, I don't think it has to be big, right? Like, there are lots of little things that you can do, and the point is to not avoid it. I think Bishop Barron put it really well in, we haven't talked about him in a while, in a episode where they were talking about passing on the faith to the next generation. And the point that he had made was that Catholic conversation needs to be normalized, not in the sense that, like, oh, it's 6 o'clock on Friday, we need to talk about the faith now, but more in the sense that it comes and goes freely. And in the same way with spiritual intimacy, right? It's not necessarily something that has to be a scheduled item in your calendar, but more so a piece that isn't avoided. I think that's where you really start to see that it's a well-rounded and prioritized part of your life together, is when, you know, if something comes up, if there was an interesting homily, you guys talk about it after Mass, or if you didn't find it interesting, you don't talk about it after Mass. And that kind of just not being something that needs to be discussed, I think that's a really great kind of place to be in.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. So let's move on. Let's talk about sex. So obviously, sexual intimacy is a big part of being married. It is. And I think that's something that, you know, by now we're in a place where we can get there without having to, you know, walk or like beat around the bushes or whatnot. Yeah. And I think I really want to dedicate the next, however long, you know, knowing us will go on forever, but like the next 10 or 15 minutes just to kind of really talk about the theology of it, right? Like, obviously the formal term, as I'm sure, you know, our listeners have heard of, is theology of the body. But I think, you know, there's so much to this, specifically within the context of marriage, that this is something, if you're discerning for this, again, capital V vocation, you need to go into this discernment and go into this relationship understanding what it means to be sexually intimate within the context of Catholicism, right? Within the context of understanding the beautiful gift that has been given to us by God. So, you know, I'll start with the most, kind of the most basic thing that we've often heard when it comes to love, when it comes to sex. And it's that, you know, it should be free. It should be total, faithful, and fruitful. FTFF, I think we've all heard that before. You and I have talked about that, I want to say, at least once or twice. And you know, this isn't a segment to kind of go into each of those just because it has been talked about so much, but I think it's a good baseline to start with, being that, you know, you want to make sure that the intimacy that you have sexually with your partner is all four of those things, is all four of those things of free, of giving yourself totally, of being faithful to one another, and of course of being fruitful. And we'll talk about being fruitful in our next episode when it comes to having children, but I think having that openness, and you know, having the objective, I suppose, of procreating is important to remember. Something I remember hearing, I believe it was Saint John Paul II, who said this as part of his whole theology of the body, is that when you're sexually intimate with your partner, it's the union of the man and the woman, and you are totally giving of yourself, from yourself to the other person. You're not holding anything back. And every time you engage in the marital act or engage in the sexual act, you are living out your marriage vows through your body. And every single time you engage in this marital act, it's a renewal of those vows. And I remember the first time I heard this, and it was just... like, it's not exaggerating for me to say that I was kind of mind blown. Like, it was a quote, it was a piece of insight that really, really struck me. Like, for you to, it really deepened my understanding of sex as not just something that, like, you're supposed to use for your own pleasure or anything, but for it to be a representation of your marriage vows through the body that you've been given. Like, I just thought that was really beautiful.
I think it's a step beyond a representation even, right? It's an actual, it's a testament or a testimony. So I think what's really neat here is that, and one of the notes that you wrote in here, what I think is really fun, that it seems like a bunch of rules, but this is the really renewal of our vows. When we're talking about the free, total, faithful, and fruitful, that's really what we're talking about in terms of the renewal of the vows, right? Like that's the vow that you make, right? Like there's all the words around it, but it is that I will freely, totally, faithfully, and fruitfully love you, and in doing so, we will bring each other to heaven, right? I've summarized and butchered the marriage mass and the marriage rite, but in that sense, right, is it to say that this is a set of rules without which everything is wrong? I think that's the wrong way of looking at it. I think it's more so, here is how you know you've got it right. And there's a reason why I say it that way. And here's the example I'll give. 1 + 1 = 2. Is that a set of rules that has been imposed on us to say that only 1 + 1, like when you do 1 + 1, you can only reach 2. And like, that's just what the world has decided for us. Like, no, like you can try to make 1 + 1 = 3, but it won't. And it's that same thing where if you have these things properly, you have the proper love. If you don't, you don't. No one's condemning you for it. It's just, you don't. Mm-hmm. And in particular, this has been really fun. This has been really neat for me in marriage, in that so many things have been made so much clearer after the fact. So I'll give a clear example. One of the most common things we hear when this topic comes up, particularly for young men who aren't married, mm-hmm. is about the dangers and what's wrong really with pornography and masturbation. Mm-hmm. And what's brought up often enough is, and almost to the point where it's like said too much, is that it's objectifying of women, you know, it bastardizes the act and these kinds of things. Now, let me say this very clearly, that you don't really get it, or I didn't really get it to the same degree. I had understood it until we're actually married now.
Yeah.
And it's, if I can phrase it this way, it's like when you're in the moment, it's, am I loving my wife, or am I getting pleasure from the beautiful woman in front of me?
Right.
And like that stark moment is like, I get it. Mm. You know, if I hadn't ever practiced getting pleasure from a beautiful woman in front of me, then that's not there to be a distraction from me loving my wife in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like mm-hmm. that was like such a clear moment for me. I was like, I get it now. Like this is, it's so much clearer. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, chastity. And I know we're going to talk about this in a second. Chastity is so much harder in marriage to me than it was before marriage. I think we talked about this at one point.
I actually feel like we did as well. Can't remember which episode, which is very customary of us, but why don't you go into what that means for you, or why you feel that chastity is so much harder in marriage?
Again. Well, the simple fact of it is that like it's a very black and white thing. You know when you've crossed the line in when you're not married, right? Yes. It's just, have you done the marital act or not, right? It's very blatant. But in marriage, it's like, well, you know what? Like this level, this act of intimacy is no longer this kind of out of bounds world. It's a place that I can go in now, but there is a proper and an improper way to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my gosh, how do I navigate this? And all of a sudden it's like, I really need to be, I need a true north, right? Father Kevin Belgrave talks about, you know, having the moral GPS to like tell you what the next step is. Like you really need that. Otherwise you so easily fall into a trap where it's not just like objectifying your wife. It's just like, I'm not properly loving my wife. I'm gratifying myself. And that just, it feels so bad, right? To like have that thought even around.
Yeah. You just know that you're doing the wrong thing. Right. And exactly. So let's kind of outline what the right thing is then. Right. So, as you've already kind of touched on, you know, being chaste outside of marriage, you kind of immediately know what that is. But once you get married, we're still called to chastity. It's not something that disappears. It doesn't mean that you can just like, you know, it's not, oh, I get married, now I can go have sex anytime kind of thing. It's not as simple as that. So first of all, let's talk about the difference between abstinence and chastity. So I just want to quickly lay it out that abstinence straight up means the absence of sex, right? And that's something that a lot of people often confuse when it comes to chastity. Does it mean I can't have sex? No. The word abstinence is what that means, is the absence of sex. Chastity is more so you know, kind of having the presence of the purity of heart, I think. It's your mindset, it's your approach, it's genuinely how you feel within your heart, instead of just like the absence of sex, right? So I think it's important to kind of remember that, because when it comes to engaging in the marital act within the context of marriage in a chaste manner, for me, it's being mindful of theology of the body. It's remembering that God has given you this gift. And it's also, we talked about, you know, having Christ at the center of your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Being chaste in marriage is also having Christ at the center of your marital act, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, when we kind of phrase it that way, it's kind of like, well, what does this mean, right? And so for me, I break it down into a couple things. The first thing is, actually, I think just one thing. It's really just remembering the purpose of the marital act, like, right? What is the purpose of the marital act in God's eyes? There are two. The first one is that it's to unite the couple, right? And I think that one is pretty obvious that, you know, like we said, when you engage in the marital act, you are renewing your vows together, and you are physically uniting yourselves to express your love for one another through your body, right? So I think that one should be pretty straightforward in that, like, this first purpose is to unite the couple. The second one, as I alluded to earlier, is to procreate, right? To procreate, it's written into our bodies to give, right? That's the role of the male, if you think about the bodies, and to receive, the role of the female, right? And I think having that openness to having children, we'll probably talk about that more in the next episode. But just within the context of understanding that this is a purpose of the marital act, like, it's just fundamental, right? It's this is kind of like what you said earlier, 1 + 1 = 2. There shouldn't be a situation where you're engaging in the marital act to not procreate, right? That's the whole fruitful aspect of it.
I'll do a small correction. It's not that you have to be wanting to have children every time. It's that you're open to having children. There's a difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the part where I'm sure we'll talk about NFP either now or next time. But when we talk about chastity, I'm not as smart as Jason. I actually don't know that much about TOB. I haven't spent that much. Every time I've gone to a TOB, this is like a confession. Every time I've gone to a TOB retreat, I've kind of dozed off. But here's how I understand chastity for a simple-minded person. Chastity is loving properly. And that's it. It's as simple as that. And what does that mean? In order to understand that, you need to break down what does love mean to you, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about JP2 and the way that JP2 describes love, in that it's a giving of self, right? It is, here's another example. Chastity doesn't limit itself, or let me say it this way, chastity doesn't limit itself to the sexual act either.
Mm-hmm.
An example could be that I need to go and perform some sort of errand for Cherry, okay? Let's say, I know Cherry's feeling sick and we need to get medicine. There is me going to get medicine because, like, oh my gosh, like, why didn't Cherry think about this beforehand? Why didn't she stock the kit? Why didn't she stock our medicine cabinet? Oh my goodness. I'll do it because it's a thing I have to do because I'm her husband.
Mm.
And that's not chaste, because that is me doing the thing that I need to do, right, out of obligation, not out of love. Versus, you know, my wife isn't feeling well, I'm going to go out, even if it's a blizzard outside, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get this medicine. And that's just the thing that I'm going to do right now. That is doing it in a loving way. So chastity really is that difference. It's, you know, am I doing this out of love, or am I doing it for something else? The reason why I say that is I think it's easy when you think about, like, am I doing what's in my heart? It's easy for me, at least, for people like me, to trick yourself. You know, like when Cher and I were first dating and right. we kind of crossed that line, it was like but I love this woman. I was like, okay, yeah, you're right. But, like, if you're looking at the proper loving, the proper act of love in that moment, right? Can I do the total peace? Well, I can't, because I haven't outwardly to the world declared that we are married, that we are together. So now inwardly and saying one thing, outwardly and saying another, now one of the four isn't there, so I'm not properly loving, mm-hmm. right? So that's how I look at it. And it's really beautiful when you look at it that way, because I'm actually taking a look here. I don't remember when I wrote this. I wrote this June 2020. I had jotted down coming out of daily mass at one point. What I wrote exactly is chastity is at its core the capacity to experience God. Mm. And the reason why I wrote that was because if chastity is how I'm loving properly, and if God is love, then that means that every time I practice chastity, I open the door for God to be present in my life. Mm-hmm. Every time I move away from chastity, I am in some way closing the door to proper love, and I'm closing myself off to experiencing God in my life, right? So mm-hmm. now all of a sudden, it kind of clicks why we talk about chastity so often in terms of living out a better vocation, because again, full circle, the point is sainthood. And if we're not letting God in, we're not helping ourselves get to sainthood. So if we're doing the sexual act, which is one of the biggest temptations of our day and age, without the proper love, now all of a sudden, my marriage becomes a vehicle for my pleasure rather than a vehicle to help me get to heaven. Yeah, that was my rant. I'm sorry.
No, that's a great way to break it down, right? Is that whole definition of purity of heart. In the sense of, I'm very glad that you gave that example, because it doesn't have to apply just to the context of sex, right? Or the context mm-hmm. of marriage, or the context of sexual acts in general. That purity of heart can apply regardless of what you're doing or what state you're in. Is you want to be doing it for the right reasons, for the will of God, essentially, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, whether it is quote unquote what you call the simplistic way, which I don't think it is at all, or whether it's the way I broke it down in terms of the two purposes of the marital act, to unite the couple and to procreate, I think it's just important to remember this, bringing this back to the context of sexual intimacy. Remember this when you are engaging in that marital act, right? Because that's just being mindful of it is kind of, for me, as someone who has not gone through this yet, kind of how you're going to go about being chaste within the context of marriage, right? I remember coming across this Bible passage in the past in the book of Tobit, where basically Tobias and his newlywed wife, and Sarah, and there's a lot more context to this, but basically I think they just got married, and this is chapter 8, verses 4 to 6, roughly. They just got married, and prior to them engaging in the sexual act for the first time, they prayed together. They prayed together, and just the context of this is that, like, Sarah had, I think it was 7 husbands prior, and she tried to have sex with each of them on the night that they got married, and then some demon killed them all, kind of thing. So mm-hmm. that's the context for why they were praying. But Tobias and Sarah, they prayed prior to having sex, and God protected them. God blessed them, right? Tobias wasn't killed by this demon. They drove this demon away. And I think that's just one of those things where, you know, we are probably called to something like that as well, right? Whether it's praying together directly, like Tobias and Sarah, but also just being, like I said, being mindful that God is at the center of this. And not immediately just going, like, diving into it and being like, we're finally married, we can have sex for the purpose of pleasure. I do want to clarify, because we have touched on this, in case anyone is wondering, like, part of theology of the body and part of what we're saying is also that pleasure isn't bad. Like, this is something that God gave to us as a gift. If it was bad to have pleasure from sex, then God probably wouldn't have made it a thing. Right? It's as simple as that. So don't take away as a message that, like, you know, pleasure is bad. But more so for me, it's like, pleasure is a byproduct of sex. It's a wonderful thing, but it's not one of the purposes of sex. It's not in the way that you described it. If you are having sex for the purpose of pleasure, you're not doing it right. You're not being chaste. You're not having that purity of heart. Anything to add there?
I think it's really... it's really freeing, actually, to not have it that way, because it lets you be deliberate about loving. One of the things that I think everyone can kind of speak to is the difference between getting, let's say, a thoughtless gift on Christmas and a thoughtful gift on Christmas, right? On the thoughtless gift, where someone gives you something that's just because it's the thing to do, that's what you feel. Right. It's like, you just felt the obligation, right? Mm-hmm. In the same way, if sex is always just about pleasure, like, oh, you just felt in the mood. Versus If we're able to take that out of the equation in terms of a motivator, it's more of a cherry on top in that sense, and the reason is love, then that means that every time you do it, it's because I really love, I want to love you right now. And that's a really beautiful thing in marriage, right? In the same way that a thoughtful gift is like, wow, I know it's Christmas, but you thought about me. Mm-hmm. That's one of the differences here, and that's part of what the beauty is, right? I know we don't have much time to talk about natural family planning, but natural family planning is really a beautiful testament to this. It's saying, let's pay attention to our bodies so that we know what our act is saying, so I can be deliberate about, I want to have sex tonight because I want us to start a family, versus I want to love you tonight and I don't know if we're ready to start a family, right? Like, to be able to have that conversation openly and just still be able to express that love, it's so much more deliberate that it means a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nope, you're right. And I do want to dive into that next time. So we'll leave that as a teaser for now. But natural family planning, the whole being openness to having children, the fruitfulness aspect of love, that's something that you can look forward to in our part two. The last question that I have to wrap this up, Andrew, for my birthday a couple months ago, you bought me a gift. You and Cherry bought me a gift. It was a hand-drawn portrait of Bran. I need to ask you, was that a thoughtful gift or was that one given to me by congregation?
That was a panic gift. I was like, oh my gosh, it's Jesus' birthday.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm not even going to try and dig myself out of that one. No, it was more of a, like, we're going to have a whole other pop. I'm a particular way about gifts. I would rather not get you a gift than I would buy you something that you're not going to enjoy. So.
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah. Why do you think I didn't get you anything for Christmas? Laziness is not the answer. But anyway, no. So we'll end it here. We do hope that you found this particular episode interesting in terms of spiritual intimacy and sexual intimacy. I actually think the next one is even more important, particularly the fourth category of what I call reorienting your dream life together. Because I find that a lot of people, you know, in their preparation for marriage, they probably don't think about this particular category enough, how they would kind of navigate these things together. So stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for the discussion of NFP and having children and raising a family. Andrew and I are really excited to talk about those things. So you'll hear from us in a couple of weeks, and thanks again for listening.
Stay safe, everyone.